And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, and joining me on this Tuesday afternoon is BCS expert, guru, master, Jerry Palm. Jerry, joining me on the phone, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind words, because that's probably the nicest thing I'm going to get called all day by a long shot.
Well, certainly this time of year, BCS standings are out. Bowl projections are somewhere where fans are always going. And for some reason, a lot of fans just for some reason blame you, I guess, for their own team's schedule. You know, things that are completely out of your hand. And I will tell listeners right now, if there's anybody who on the entire CBSSports.com college football team, if there is anybody that is disconnected from nonsense, it's Jerry Palm. And and it's funny because we spoke 2 weeks ago about your BCS projected standings. Here we sit today on Tuesday. The first BCS standings have been released Sunday. And a lot of hubbub, a lot of talk radio hours, and not too many minutes on this podcast will be spent on the fact that Florida State is at number two instead of Oregon. We talked about the computers and small sample size here, but that's pretty much – that was my assumption. Seeing Florida at Florida State at number two, I believe that that's just because Oregon's computer rankings will be boosted as they get into their Pac-12 schedule.
Yeah, there's no question. This is typical of October. It's actually uncommon in the – you know, the BCS era, for the first BCS standings to have the top two teams in the polls, one and two. And the reason for that is because you still got a mess of undefeated teams. I think we have nine still. You've got a bunch of teams with one loss, and the computers just don't have enough data to sort all that out. So right now, Florida State's the number one computer team. Oregon's number four. And that gap is enough to overcome the pretty significant margin that Oregon has in the two polls. So I always tell people this time of year, look at the poll numbers. Forget the overall BCS numbers. Look at the poll numbers, because those are going to be consistent throughout the season, and they're going to dictate what happens in late November and December when this thing really matters. And Oregon has got a pretty substantial lead in the polls over Florida State, and I don't know that Florida State can really do anything about it. I don't know how you change voters' minds, but they had as dominating a win as anybody has had, probably the most impressive performance by a single team the entire season so far, and yet they really didn't make up that much ground on Oregon in these polls. So if that didn't do it, I don't know what's going to do it other than Oregon messing up. So Oregon controls their own destiny for the BCS title game. Alabama controls their own destiny, and probably Missouri does as well, because if Missouri does get to 13-0 and beats Alabama on the way, especially, it's hard to imagine an undefeated SEC team not playing for the title. But other than that, everybody else is going to need some level of help, and that includes the current BCS number two, Florida State.
At what point do you think you can sort of obviously you just mentioned pretty much four teams that are have a legitimate shot. The computers have Baylor at number 8, Texas Tech at number 10. Not computers, the BCS standings have Baylor at number 8, Texas Tech at number 10, Oklahoma at number 15. I still don't see a team, Baylor or Texas Tech, going undefeated through the Big 12 play. Is there any way that we will see those things will jockey in the coming weeks as they begin to play each other? Like, will Baylor get a big boost from a team they've beaten picking up a win?
Not really. I mean, if you look at the Big 12, I mean, I think there's a pecking order in terms of these teams, and they're already pretty much slotted in that order. You've got the SEC champ, you've got Oregon, you've got probably the ACC champ, then you've got Ohio State, and then you've got the Big 12. In terms of just undefeated teams, what order they would finish in. So Baylor or Texas Tech, either one, if they actually do run the table, they're not going to get the kind of a marquee win, not even playing each other, that gives them the kind of a push to even get past Ohio State. okay? And Ohio State has got the same problem. There isn't an opponent on their schedule, past or present, that's going to give them the kind of win that Florida State just had that gave them a push up the polls. Ohio State is probably at their floor. They're probably not going to get any worse, but they're also not going to get any better until somebody ahead of them gets beat. And, you know, but Missouri can get up because they got Alabama. Miami might be able to get up because of Florida State. That's a little bit less definite. But anyways, that's sort of the pecking order now. As Oregon's schedule is, they're going to get into the meat of their schedule. There's no way Florida State's going to hold them off in the computers. Alabama's got better opponents coming. It's just, you know, Ohio State, Baylor, Texas Tech, they've got some decent opponents coming, but not the kind that's going to get anybody's attention.
I'm starting to suspect, but you know, we're going to sort of veer on and off whether it is BCS related. Jerry Palm and I enjoy discussing football with you, so let's veer off the BCS train for a second. I think Ohio State gets beat this year, and I think it happens because I haven't seen them just drive an opponent into the ground. They do a great job of, you know, sort of finishing an opponent off with, especially with Carlos Hyde and Braxton Miller in the fourth quarter. But I haven't seen that sort of, like the Florida State against Clemson, like what we've seen from Oregon and Alabama, go up against a conference opponent and just beat them right out of the game. And I think that someone's going to catch them off guard. What do you think?
Well, I think that those opponents are coming. You know, Wisconsin's a pretty good football team. I would say probably the most underrated team in the country right now, in part because they had that fluke loss to Arizona State. But that to me is clearly the second best team in the Big Ten. If Ohio State is going to get beat, they're certainly not invincible by any stretch. If they're going to get beat, that loss is coming at Michigan on the final day of the season, or in the Big Ten championship game. Probably still against Michigan, although you might see a Michigan State or Nebraska there. But those are the only opponents left on the schedule capable of beating them. Penn State at home this week, no. At Purdue, my gosh, no. At Illinois, no. Indiana has a puncher's chance because of their offense, but they can't stop anybody. So those, I mean, you could combine a couple of those rosters and they're not going to beat Ohio State. But Michigan's got a shot, especially at home. But if Ohio State's going to lose, I mean, you look at these undefeated teams that are left. To me, Ohio State has got the best chance of actually finishing undefeated because of their schedule.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree with that. You know, we're sitting here talking about Ohio State potentially getting upset. Let's talk about the upsets that have happened. Last 2 weeks, absolutely insane. 16 top 25 teams have lost. Some of those in that 16 is twice, including Georgia. In your opinion, Jerry, which of these results at the end of the year, when the final BCS picture is coming together, when the conference races are coming together, which of these upsets do you think is going to be a game that we look back and point to and say, you know what, that was a big turning point in the season?
I don't know that it's going to be one single upset, but I would say that the SEC East in particular this past weekend collectively, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina all losing, and South Carolina losing their quarterback. And, you know, Florida's already down a quarterback. Georgia has a quarterback, but nobody to hand off or throw to.
Right.
I think that those three losses this weekend collectively actually kind of endangers the SEC's chances of getting two teams in the BCS. Because those teams are now, you know, just a couple of them have three losses. I think South Carolina's got two. If Missouri beat South Carolina this week, that division is pretty much over, but they're still playing a freshman backup quarterback for a while. You know, they could still take a loss or two. Auburn at 6-1 has got one really good win just this past weekend, which was huge, but are they going to maintain that all the way through to the Alabama game? We could get to a point where if Alabama finishes 13-0, there might not be another team that is BCS eligible from this league. Now, that other things might have to happen to do that, but what happened this past weekend, it was a big step in that direction.
That's you know, it's a wild, wild world, and it was what Tom and I said on Sunday, that the only one loss or undefeated teams, which, you know, you would think BCS title contender, you need to either be undefeated or have one loss to have a shot.
Right.
It's Auburn, definitely. Missouri, and Alabama. You know, just like we all predicted, right?
Yep, exactly, right. and the SEC, I mean, that's it. You know, those are the three teams that control their own destiny right now for the SEC championship. And Alabama, you know, at times this year, Alabama hasn't looked as invincible as Alabama did last year. You know, there have been times where Alabama has found ways to win, and that's what championship teams do. But I don't look at this Alabama team and think, oh, this team absolutely cannot be beat. Right. I think that this team can be beat, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody can do it in the regular season.
Interesting note about Missouri before we move on. I'm starting to get the hunch that if they do lock up the East, those last two games on their SEC schedule are, is it at Ole Miss and then home against Texas A&M? Or some combination
of that? Yeah, A&M I'm pretty sure is last.
Yeah.
And those are definitely teams that could beat them.
Right.
No question about it.
If they've got the SEC East locked up, there's a good chance for a little bit of a letdown there.
It's the other way around in terms of location. At Ole Miss, home A&M.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and you're right. They definitely could let down. They also might have James Franklin back by then, which would make it interesting. But, you know, the thing about Missouri is if they're still undefeated at that point, they really do have something to play for in terms of a shot at the national title. But if they get it wrapped up, and let's say they lose this week to South Carolina, but 2 weeks from now they wrap up the title anyway, now you're talking about the potential for a letdown because they don't have a national championship really to play for at that point.
Very interesting, SEC East. All right, so Jeff Sagarin has removed margin of victory from his formula, and I don't quite understand Sagarin's rating, so I'm going to, for the most part, turn the table over to you. But you, in your headline of the blog post, you used the word finally, so I'm guessing you're excited about this.
No.
Oh, you're not.
and let me explain.
Okay.
I don't have any sort of definitive proof of what I'm claiming in here, and I wrote that in the piece. And the reason for that is it can only be proved by the formula. So Sagarin basically denies this, but what happened is he's had this field on his report called ELO Chess, which is supposedly a non-margin of victory version of his ratings that the BCS has been using for the last 11 years since they declared margin of victory could no longer be used. All of a sudden, this week, that column is gone, has been replaced with something called ELO Score that supposedly does have scoring margins in it. And when you look at the results anecdotally, it looks very similar to what it replaced, which was called ELO Chess and supposedly did not have margin of victory. Meanwhile, he's added another column called Pure ELO that does not have margin of victory, he says. And now that's the one being used by the BCS. So at the very least, he has changed his formula significantly for the last season of the BCS and chose the first week of the BCS to introduce that, but it looks very much like the old version is still there with a new name, and now it says there's scoring margin. So that's what I wrote. And then I wrote that, you know, I can't prove this because I don't have the formulas, and that's really the only way to prove it. His formulas, like everybody else's except Holly's, are secret. So it's anecdotal, and I got beat up a little bit for basically throwing out an accusation without being able to prove it. But, you know, like I said, this is, you know, part of the problem with this system is that none of it is accountable. None of it's open. None of it's accountable. We don't know. Okay, so Jeff wrote me that day and said that I got it wrong, that the ELO Chess was not margin of victory and that the new one is, and that ELO Score is, and that this other thing is something that he's been working on and used in basketball. And, you know, we have no choice, I guess, but to take his word for it, because he's not going to prove it, and I can't prove it either, but it looks suspicious. It looks bad to change in the middle of the season. It looks bad that the new margin of victory rankings look very much like the old supposed non-margin of victory rankings, and that's why I put it the way I did. I suppose it's a bit sensationalistic to do it that way, but, you know, I'm not entirely convinced. I mean, it's not that I don't trust Jeff,
right?
But, you know, the numbers are what the numbers are. You know, his margin of victory numbers look a whole heck of a lot more like his old supposed non-margin of victory numbers than what he's using for non-margin of victory now, which, by the way, his new BCS use formula, the one without margin of victory, it has got 7 1AA teams in the top 25. 7.
Bethune-Cookman
is
yeah.
fourth. Northern Illinois is fifth in these new rankings, and he says these are better. He says by the end of the season that'll bear out, but boy, if this is better, you really got to wonder. I mean, I realize it's, early still in the season, not that much data, but that's pretty wild.
Is there any personal, and I don't know, Jeff, so we've never had any correspondence, but is there any personal gain to be had by just trying something out? Is it just the fact that this is the very last year of the BCS?
No, I mean, Jeff doesn't really operate that way. Jeff, does this sort of thing for his own edification, and he shares it. He doesn't share the formulas, but he's not going to all of a sudden make more money or something like that because he's trying out some new formula. He thinks that mathematically it's better, and that's why he's using it. So he's in it for the educational pursuit, for the mathematical and statistical pursuit, and it's not going to benefit him financially or anything like that.
Have you ever tried to write your own formula?
Yeah, I got my own.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, I don't love it, but I've used it. I published it for a while, and since CBS doesn't really have a place for it on their site, so I haven't really been publishing it the last couple of years. I did some version of it for the 1-125 last year that was modified from what I usually do, but I do have my own, and if I ever get the time and inclination, I may try and make it better, but mine would never be like a part of the BCS because I would never let them use it for one. But also, I use margin of victory, so I don't think you can ignore that and do anything decent in football.
The Tom has a formula too. Y'all should meet up. Tom Fornelli.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, we compare our. I do just a top 30. Just my own personal opinion. And he's got his formula, and we always put them side by side. We should we should maybe get yours in there and see what it looks like.
I'll have to start computing mine again. I'll send it to you.
All right, we got a week 9 ahead that does not necessarily appear that anything will happen. Again, knock on wood for the BCS title contenders, but our top 4 teams – heavily favored in all these games ahead this weekend. I guess Oregon UCLA is the closest thing that we've got. DeAnthony Thomas going to be back for the Ducks. UCLA is beat up after just Brett Hundley was entirely shut down by Stanford's defensive front. I suspect that UCLA could be suffering the same thing we saw from Washington, which is the old Bruce Feldman body blow theory, which is if you, the week after you play Stanford, you're still hurting, and if you're hurting, hard team to try and play if you're going up against the Ducks. Are you giving UCLA a shot in this game?
A little shot, but, when we do our upset picks this week, I'm not going UCLA. I'll just tell you right now. I'm not going with UCLA. And actually, I think Bruce's theory has some validity to it. I think there are certain teams. I mean, I think of the old Bears, with the Chicago Bears. When they weren't all that good, but their defense was ferocious, man, you that team would beat you up. And then the next week, teams had a bad record after playing the Bears. You might beat the Bears, but your next week you're in trouble.
Right.
And I think there might be something to that. Very physical teams can do that to you. UCLA is probably the third best team in the league, but I don't know what it is about the Pac-10 office, the people who do scheduling. They stuck Washington with Stanford and Oregon back-to-back. And then now they stuck UCLA with Stanford and Oregon back-to-back, and both games on the road. What did UCLA do to irritate somebody in the Pac-12 office? I mean, that's just not fair. It's bad enough you got to play them both, but to play them back-to-back on the road? UCLA, I think, is a pretty good team. They may not win the division because of this schedule. They've got an excellent defense, but they're really going to be tested at Oregon. They can hang around for a half, but I just can't see them winning the game.
That's what I get frustrated with, because I've really enjoyed watching Pac-12 football this year, but the two upstart teams that I felt so good about at the beginning of the year, Washington and UCLA, are just getting drugged through the fire during this Pac-12 conference schedule, and they're probably going to finish at a, you know, and I don't mean, they'll finish at what, 8-4, 9-3, 7-5. It won't be as impressive as the product that was on the field at the beginning of the year, especially in comparison to where they were.
And look at Washington. I mean, yeah. Washington gets Stanford, then Oregon, and then I believe
Arizona State. Yeah.
Right after that. And how do you get up? And Arizona State's a good team. I mean, that's my pick from the beginning of the year to win that division. You know, and then you've got, you know, how do you get up for Arizona State after you played two top five teams back to back? And really, I thought did a very good job going toe to toe, especially with Stanford, but even with Oregon for a while. And now you got to get back up. And it's like playing those two games cost you a third. And just, it's a really unfortunate scheduling for Washington.
Yeah, I think that's what you saw when, as Arizona State just got after Keith Price, sacking him seven times, you know, Will Sutton getting in there, Carl Bradford, they were just putting a hurting on the Huskies quarterback. We got Texas Tech and Oklahoma. Texas Tech is a strange team because they continue to, regardless of who's in there at quarterback, Baker Mayfield, Davis Webb, it seems that they're going to throw for 400 yards. I think it's because they've got the right skill position there. Jason Morrow, Bradley Marquez, Kenny Williams running the ball. I can't figure them out, though, but they're going to Norman against an Oklahoma team that has been wildly inconsistent as well. Who do you have more?
Perfect in one team.
Yeah. Who do you have more faith in?
Oklahoma? And I would not be surprised if Oklahoma put up a big number on them.
Oh, really?
For one, Oklahoma's going to be pretty pissed. Because that Texas game, I mean, realize, you know, there's a play the game in between, but this is a team that feels like it's the best in the Big 12, didn't show it, and is now going to take it out on somebody. Secondly, Texas Tech hasn't played anybody with a defense, not one team with a defense, with the possible exception of TCU, on which they scored 20 points at home.
Right.
So Texas Tech has not been even close to tested, especially by a team the caliber of Oklahoma. I like Oklahoma, and I like them big in this game.
Really?
Yep.
I don't feel confident in Texas Tech, but the Kansas-Oklahoma game was very, very odd. But
you got to consider that a letdown kind of game, right? You know, Oklahoma's coming off a humiliating loss. Now they're playing a team that, you know, can barely tie its shoes and figure out which end of the football is up, and probably had a mental letdown.
Yeah.
And yet still found a way to win. Now, you know, back on track, they've got an undefeated team coming to their place. They're not going to lay down for them at all. They'll be ready to go, and I think they're going to stick it to them.
So Stanford gets back on track with a rushing attack. Tyler Gaffney, that was sort of the missing piece for me in the Stanford loss to Utah, was Utah really shut down the rushing attack. And if you're going to play tough defense, it's nice to pair it with a productive rushing attack. How do you think they're going to fare going on the road to Corvallis, going up against Sean Mannion and Brandon Cooks, really one of the best quarterback wide receiver duos in the country?
Yeah, again, Oregon State is a team that I don't trust yet, that I don't believe in yet. I mean, Mannion's putting up gaudy numbers, and Cooks is a terrific player. But the best team that they played to this point, or maybe the second best team they played to this point, beat them. And that's Eastern Washington.
Oh,
they also won at Utah. That's probably the best team they've played. And they had to come back and win that game in overtime. And, of course, Stanford lost at Utah. So, you know, there's something to be said for that, I guess. But I think that Stanford is significantly better, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And Mannion and Cooks are going to have their first real test of this season, and it'll be interesting to see if they pass. I like Stanford. I don't think it's going to be necessarily easy for them to win, but if Oregon State is for real, I guess we'll finally see it this week.
Yeah, there's got to be, if Oregon State's going to make it, happen. It's got to be by establishing a little bit of balance. I know Mannion's putting up eye-popping numbers, but to me, the fact that
eye-popping numbers against, like the three worst teams in the Pac-12.
Right. But those UCLA didn't have any balance. That was the thing that I saw. Perkins was not, like, Jordan James was missed. Perkins was sort of shut down or kept in check. Brett Hundley faced a ton of, third and long, a lot of obvious pass rushing situations and just really was bottled up. And Mannion has none of the mobility that Brett Hundley has.
Right, exactly.
We also got, going back to that SEC East before we get you out of here, South Carolina at Missouri. Matty Mauk gets again. I mean, this is a wonderful way. You want to talk about a conference office and a schedule working out. How about Missouri catching this break this season? Do you think he'll be able to do it again against the Gamecocks?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, the thing I was looking at last week was I was concerned because Florida was the one team that's still playing what I think of as being SEC defense and winning with defense first. I mean, even South Carolina, which has got Jadeveon Clowney, when he plays, is a pretty good defensive team. Really, to me, though, Florida had been the best, most consistent defense, maybe short of Alabama, in the SEC to this point. And, they scored 36 on them. And I think that, to me, that was pretty impressive. And now, can you do it again against South Carolina? I mean, basically, if Missouri wins this game, the division race is over.
Yeah.
And I think South Carolina's reeling. It doesn't look like Connor Shaw's going to play. I like Missouri in this game.
Doesn't look like Connor Shaw's going to play. Also, particularly with just sort of everything, there's a lot of good rushers in that Missouri backfield. And Kelsey Quarles and maybe another defensive tackle, I think, are dealing with injuries. The defensive backfield is banged up.
For South Carolina you're talking about.
Yeah, for South Carolina. South Carolina's
right,
D,
yeah.
When healthy and when Clowney is active, is absolutely right there as, one of the top three defensive units in the SEC. I will agree with you.
Sure.
But Clowney's best game was against Tennessee, when the rest of the defensive unit seemed to either be banged up, unprepared, or just taking the game off, because Tennessee was able to get the ball moving on the ground and get right up at the middle of that Gamecocks defense. I think that was a big red flag for me. I'm with you. I think Missouri can do this.
And, another thing about Missouri that doesn't really get as much talk is that they've got a pretty good defensive team, too.
They're fast and physical.
They're not great. They're not one of the top defenses in the country, but that's an above-average defense. And when you have an offense like theirs, all you need is an above-average defense.
Yeah, Michael Sam, defensive end, anchoring that defensive line that plays bigger than they look on the depth chart.
Probably the best defensive player few people have heard of.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, have you taken any look? You're going to give us any tease of what your upset alert game is going to be, or what are you eyeing?
Well, I don't know. Is Texas Tech Oklahoma an upset alert? I don't know. I haven't checked the lines yet to see who's really on upset alert yet this week. It's Tuesday, so I've been with the first week of the BCS. All I've done is talk about last week. I haven't really looked ahead yet. So no clues yet on the upset alert. I'll alert you on Thursday, and then you can read all about it on Friday.
If Clemson loses at Maryland, bad news for Florida State, right?
You know what? Here's the thing about Clemson. That is such a beatdown that they took. And really, we talked about like how Oklahoma had a letdown against Kansas a little bit, still found a way to win. Maryland is really dinged up. If Maryland was healthy, I would pick Maryland flat out. Because Clemson, I mean, that's the kind of a game where you've got to really focus on not letting Florida State beat you twice. And Maryland, 3 weeks ago, I would have said Maryland would be good enough to win this game. I'm not sure that that's true anymore. Maybe Clemson will get it. Maybe they won't. They are Clemson, after all. But I think that is definitely a potential upset alert game for Clemson, because just how are they going to get their heads back on straight for this one?
Yeah. That's, again, if Maryland had a entirely healthy C.J. Brown at quarterback, a Stephon Diggs, mm-hmm. Deion Log at wide receiver, and no injury issues on
that's a big loss.
Yeah, no injury issues on the defensive side of the ball. Then yeah, I think I might pick it too, but I need some time to simmer on that. But anyway, at JP Palm CBS on Twitter. Make sure you follow him and keep track of all the BCS action. Please, please think twice before you send something uneducated. He's just the guy that reports it. He doesn't pick it. For Jerry Palm, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.